Ulterior.
Say his name and he appears, except for a couple years now, he hasn't really known what his name is. And aside from, you know, having like some kind of an identity crisis or whatever it might be that I've been feeling and experiencing, the last couple of months have been some of the most challenging and trying of my life, and I don't really want to get like super in depth about it on here. I kind of did a little bit on social media, so if you guys saw the video that I posted on TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, it kind of goes into a little bit about like where my head was at and what could have potentially happened to Ulterior. And then after the fact of all that, and then me going back to social media and trying to like get the hang of videos again, I kind of went through a little bit of an episode, we'll go ahead and call it that, where I suddenly had like this really strong desire to not use the name Ulterior anymore. And again, I'm not going to go greatly into detail about that because it's an entire process and it's a bunch of stuff that is probably only existing in my head and not anywhere outward. But I try to like rebrand everything away from Ulterior and just having my name on it, which is Carlos Aguilar III. And, you know, even something as simple as that, I've not been cognizant of for the entire duration of Ulterior because I've tried to have my name be Artisan Carlos for reasons that made sense to me when I was 21, 22. But the reality is I'm 29 now. I turn 30 next year. I don't want to be known as some online screen name that, you know, I lost a real attachment to years and years ago. I want everything to be credited to my name. I want people who know Ulterior to know me by my name. And I had like this, again, episode where I thought that the only way for me to achieve that was to abandon the name Ulterior. But then as a couple days went by, I was like, what do I call the podcast? What do I even call what I do? Because it just felt kind of weird to not have that name anymore, at least like as the brand name. And then it suddenly hit me like I can still be Carlos Aguilar III and still have the brand name be Ulterior. I can still do all of that with the Ulterior name. So, you know, I kind of went through like this rebranding phase for ultimately nothing in the end, or at least nothing except for learning this lesson that I am now regurgitating to all of you in some fashion right now. You know, having a bachelor's degree in communication, you would think that I would have a greater sense and understanding of like branding and advertising and marketing, but really, I'm just a dumbass with a microphone and an obsession with scene music who is trying to learn as he goes along. And I once again ask for you guys for any kind of leeway when it comes to, you know, me having productivity, because I really, really, really am trying my best, even though there had not been an episode in 2 months. And last time you guys heard me talk was me fucking freaking out, losing my mind over Posthuman Next Gen. I promise you guys, I am really, really trying. If there is ever a point where the podcast, you know, kind of takes a backseat again, I urge all of you guys to go check out the reviews that I do on Twitter and Instagram, because those will not be going away. As long as I have the ability to listen to music and make those graphics, I will continue to, you know, put my reviews and my opinions on albums and EPs and singles out there, because all of that still means the world to me and I still want to give back to the scene however way I can. And I want to also address one last thing, and this will be the only place where I really address it. The reviews on social media that I do, they've always been accompanied by two things. One, the mascot, which is like a cat with bleeding eyes, and then two, the catchphrase, which is, for the love of the game, let's watch so-and-so band make a scene. Those two things are not going to be a part of the brand anymore. The mascot, while it is like super, super important and deep to me in its meaning and like what it actually represents to Ulterior, that meaning is like so personal to the point where I really don't want to have to explain to anybody in the future what it means. I would really prefer to just have that be to myself. And if I'm going to make it to myself, then, you know, the mascot really shouldn't be plastered all over everything with Ulterior. So the mascot is not there anymore, and I have now moved into a normal traditional star rating system. And then the catchphrase of like, for the love of the game, let's watch whatever, whatever, make a scene. I think at the time of me starting Ulterior, having a catchphrase kind of made sense to at least like stand out and be recognizable and do something different. But just because something is different doesn't mean it's good, you know? And I really do believe that over time, the use of that catchphrase in every review, and then even on this podcast, it just kind of felt very robotic. Like, that wasn't really me. Like, I was just doing that to, you know, accommodate some kind of a checklist of things that I believed I needed, when in reality, I probably don't. And if you're a band that I tag and you just see the review, it probably looks confusing as fuck, because it's like, what does "For the Love of the Game" mean? What does "Make a Scene" mean? And, you know, again, in some fashion, similarly to the mascot, these are things that I don't want to have to explain ad nauseum, because I understand that they're very confusing to the average eye. So those two things are gone, and the reviews are going to be a lot more traditionally done, and I feel like that is going to be to the benefit of Ulterior and the benefit of myself, the person that I am. I'm not Artisan Carlos, I am Carlos Aguilar III. So as for this episode, I am going to be taking on a concept that is meant to kind of like ease my way back into podcasting, because having taken 2 months off, that really did fuck with my confidence and my ability to, you know, speak with like a certain flow and a certain cadence that I believe resonates like comfortability and confidence in this whole podcast. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be looking at my 20 favorite songs from the first half of the year. This is not a list of my top 20 songs. This is not in any order. This is kind of just to, you know, give some kind of an idea of like where my head is at as far as the first half of the year goes, with what songs stood out to me, what could potentially impact the top 100 song series in December, and, you know, just really get some thoughts across and, you know, give myself the room to waffle and, you know, get my footing in the podcasting field back. If you spent the last whatever amount of minutes it was listening to me just ramble and be super tangential, thank you so, so fucking much. You really did not have to do that. I don't know why you did, but if you did it, I fuck with you. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you guys so much. So like I said before the intro, this episode will be covering my favorite 20 songs of the year. This is not in an order, so it's not me going from 20 to 1. The order is just done alphabetically by the song name, and I'm doing that as a means of like not really showing my hand too much about which of these 20 songs actually is my favorite and like which ones, you know, rank in the top 5 or anything like that. And I understand that 20 songs is kind of a lot, so I'm going to try to keep my thoughts really concise and not, you know, start waffling about one more so than the other. So that is the criteria for all this. And again, this is really more so just me kind of hanging out with you guys and, you know, getting some thoughts out there about some songs that, you know, I have spoken about before and some that I haven't. So we're going to try and get through this as quickly and effortlessly as possible. And just to preface this, it's of the half year, so even though we're already past the middle of July, any song that has been released in July is not eligible for the list. 20 favorite songs of the half year so far in 2024 by Carlos Aguilar III. Let's fucking get it. The first song up is A Dozen Roses by Amira Alfiki. I know that Amira was initially popping off around last year off of the Tonight demo, but for myself, it wasn't until I came across A Dozen Roses on TikTok sometime back at the start of the year that she became like this entity to me, and I was like, who is this? What is this? Because what I was hearing off of A Dozen Roses, it sounded like a fucking like tortured soul, a tormented spirit, just like letting out these really somber lines over an even more somber sounding song in the background of her voice. And kind of just the way that Amira like carries out the verses in this like like a defeated manner, and how that erupts into this chorus that is like so very simple in its delivery, but so fucking effective in everything that it tries to do. To some extent, it is kind of like Deftones and Sleep Token coded, but I think it's also much more in alignment with everything that I've been able to understand Amira does with her own music. And I think A Dozen Roses is very comfortably her magnum opus right now. And ultimately, it's a song that I'm not going to be forgetting after, you know, this next half year or the year after or any time after that, for that matter. A Dozen Roses is one of the most daunting and creepy and in some ways like horrific sounding songs I've ever heard, but at the same time, it is truly one of the best I've been able to experience all year so far. The next song is Anything More Than Human by Bad Omens featuring JT Cavey from Era. Concrete Forever OST brought forth a lot of really new and, in some ways, at least for the band, innovative ideas from Bad Omens, and the new songs off of the record are like this giant, explorative pieces for the band, ultimately, in their discography. You have songs that are like very like EDM sounding, and then some that kind of have like a hip-hop flair in the case of Terms and Conditions. But then Anything More Than Human is one of the songs on there that is super familiar to the style of Bad Omens, at least off of the Death Piece of Mind. And I was listening to that song for the first time when the album had just dropped. And I remember listening to Noah in the verses and just kind of thinking like, okay, this is kind of like an expansion of what the band had already been doing, and I was already fucking with it immensely. And then the chorus came in, and it is one of those like giant waves of sound that just like comes right at you. And then in the second chorus, when you have JT on the track instead of Noah, it really, I think, emphasizes not only the talent of Bad Omens themselves, but also JT and the range that this guy has and how effortlessly well he was able to fit into the system that was laid by Anything More Than Human. It's one of the coolest things I think Bad Omens have ever been able to do. And, you know, for an album or like let's just call it an adventure, because I feel like that's what Concrete Forever is more emblematic of. For an adventure like Concrete Forever OST that really did not have to be like so, what's the right word? Like so, I guess, definitive of where Bad Omens stand right now, Anything More Than Human did become just that. I think it is definitively Bad Omens, and it is definitively JT. The next song is Blue Reverie by Era. So even though I literally just mentioned Era and JT Cavey when talking about the Bad Omens feature, Blue Reverie is more explorative of a different side of Era, because Jesse Cash is primarily on lead for this song, and I think we've seen Era explore this kind of a sound before when you think of songs like Skyline and Memory Fiction, and they've always been able to kind of wield that style super well and so effectively. But I think Blue Reverie like takes it up a notch in a way. Not that it's a better song than the two that I just mentioned, but I think where Era stand right now, having a song on Cure that is as daring as Blue Reverie, it made all the sense in the world, and I think it made a big impact on that record. And when I look at these kinds of songs that are, you know, a little bit leaning into Ghost Atlas territory rather than Era, I think Blue Reverie is the best of that bunch for this new record. And while I was like really big on this song from the beginning when it came out as a single back in, I believe it was February of this year, when I saw Era live back on May 5th, and they got into Blue Reverie, and that quiet intro, and just the way that everybody in the audience just like serenaded these words right back to Jesse and right back to the rest of the band, it was this super euphoric moment that kind of opened my eyes to the fucking beast that Blue Reverie really is and the kind of magnitude of an effect that it can have on this band's discography and set list for the rest of time moving forward. Blue Reverie is beautiful. It is also hellish in some sections. I think the closing stretch of the song, which kind of is like the climax of the track, with Jesse and JT having like this dueling vocalist moment where Jesse is singing and JT is screaming, it is just like this perfect mix that makes Blue Reverie the perfect song for Era. And I really do believe that this ended up being, in my eyes, the highest point and the ceiling when it came to Cure. The next song is Criminal by Stan Atlantic featuring Jamie Hales from Polaris. So I've seen the discussions about Stan Atlantic over the last year or so, or however long it's been since they released Sex on the Beach, and I've seen the crazy talk on their name. I've seen the opinions out there about this band, you know, maybe not really having that certain touch anymore, and you know what? To that I say, I don't get it. I think they've been fine this whole time. I think they're still putting out quality music, even if some of it's not as good as what we heard off of Fear, Fuck Everything and Run. I still thought it was of a certain quality that I would expect out of Stan Atlantic, a very good standard that I think they have upheld. And then Criminal came out, and I think Criminal actually raised the fucking bar for this band and everything that they're able to do. Because when I hear those like slow builds in the verses, it feels kind of like menacing and brooding, and then that spirals into this very, like, catchy sounding and, like, foot tapping, head nodding, all of that shit that you do whenever a song is, like, in your core. That is what registers to me when I hear this chorus, and it is among the best performances I have ever heard out of Bonnie vocally. When you get to the bridge and the breakdown and having Jamie come in and just lay over these screams that are like not really characteristic to what Stan Atlantic normally do, it feels very innovative for the band and very cool for that matter. I think Criminal is one of the highest points that Stan Atlantic have ever reached, and I am very, very happy as a fan of theirs, a big fan of that, to have been able to listen to it and say that I resonate with this song in that manner. The next song is Crying by Static Dress. Brother, I'm on year 5 now of telling any motherfucker who will listen to me to check out Static Dress and get invested in them and put stock in this band, because I've always believed that they are representative of everything that the scene will stand for in the future, and they are pillars in that sense. They are flag bearers for where I think we're heading, and Crying, more than anything else, it kind of like, it really reaffirms me in my belief that Static Dress is very much so very easily the future of the scene, and everything that they stand for, the way that they sound, the way they present themselves, the way they carry themselves, it is where we're headed, and there is no better flag bearer for that right now than Static Dress. And while I do not necessarily want to call Crying an accessible sounding song, I think for the nature of Static Dress, it is rather accessible. And it's one of those songs that once you hear that chorus, I do not believe that there is any plausible way that it can escape your mind. And you will always remember the way that Ollie Appleyard extended these melodies and these notes, and the way that his voice made you feel, and just the way that this song is able to like pull you in and captivate you the same way that I really do believe every single effort by Static Dress up to this point has been able to do. It is one of the coolest things I think Static Dress have to their name right now. It's the perfect song to kind of be the bridge from the Rouge Carpet Disaster era into whatever is going to be coming from the band next. And like the way that I've been this entire time, I will be there no matter what. I will be championing the fuck out of this band, and I would hope and plead and beg for any of you out there listening to join me in on that, because Static Dress is the future of everything that we stand for. For those keeping track, that was song number 5, so we are a quarter of the way through this whole endeavor that you guys are listening to for some reason, but thank you though, I really, really appreciate it. The next song is Defamation by Boys of Fall. So I can safely say that I have kind of had like this up and down relationship in a way with Boys of Fall, because I feel like for as many times as they have like really blown me away and made me believe in what they're doing and become invested in their sound, they've also had moments where I'm like kind of taken out of that mindset a little bit, and I feel like the potential that they've shown at points is not fully realized. And when it comes to the self-titled record that they had back in April, I think, you know, that's kind of a good way to sum up how I feel about that album. There are some high points, and then there are some midpoints, and then maybe, you know, a slight handful of low points. But in the case of Defamation, not only do I believe that song is the highest point for the self-titled album, I think there is a real case for it being the highest point in the history of this band. Defamation really might be the best that they have ever sounded, at least in my mind. And because I feel like this might not be the best way to describe Boys of Fall's overall style and sound, there's probably a better description out there somewhere that anybody else could formulate for me, but one of the charms of Boys of Fall has been in songs where they can't really decide if they want to be pop punk or metalcore. And Defamation is like the biggest and boldest and best representation of that idea. Like, it's just so goddamn effortless and so easy the way that the song transitions from being heavy into being soft, from the screams into the cleans. Like, a little detail that I love about the song is in the pre-chorus, it's kind of just like this really muted band with guitar feedback being all that you can really make out, and then the way that that just like erupts into this chorus that is among the catchiest I've heard all year and maybe the best for this band in their entire tenure. I think Defamation, like I said before, it really has a case of being like the crowning achievement and the crown jewel of everything this band has ever sought to do, and I cannot get enough of Defamation. And I really think, like, when I get these kinds of songs from Boys of Fall, it's very hard for me to feel like there is any band out there doing this style better than them. The next song is Designer Decay by Too Close to Touch featuring Elijah Witt from Cane Hill. So because of the obvious tragic circumstances surrounding Four Keeps, which was the final Too Close to Touch record that came out back in March of this year, part of this album ended up being like a glimpse into what could have been, more so than like what was for this band. And when I listened to Designer Decay the first time, I could not believe at all that this is a Too Close to Touch song, because even though it's very much so like still in like a blueprint stage and it's gonna have to stay there forever, very sadly, it showed that like Keaton and the rest of the band at least toyed with the idea of having a song that was a lot more like metalcore in its nature and its tendencies than anything else the band had done in their lifetime. Like, it's got like this like pulsating synth rhythm going for it initially, and then that just like breaks out into this very fast-paced verse where Keaton and Elijah are acting as like the perfect narrators for what Designer Decay is going for, and then the chorus like really adds to that. And I think the song, like I said, it shows a lot of like what could have been and what is very, again, fucking sadly and unfortunately never going to be. There's a fucking breakdown in the song, like a proper breakdown in a Too Close to Touch song. And again, even if this, you know, sounds more like a demo than anything else, I still am really, really appreciative of at least having been given the chance to listen to this song and understand what could have been when it came to the minds of Too Close to Touch and how adventurous everybody was. And even Elijah, like, give it up for this fucking guy, man. Like, he added so much to this song, and he ended up being the perfect voice and the perfect feature spot to really help flesh out what Designer Decay was going for. It is the most radically different sounding song ever by Too Close to Touch, and I, you know, without harping on anything more than I already have, like, I really, 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 really wish things could have been different and we could have seen this idea be fully fleshed out the way that it deserved to be. The next song is Devil in the Details by Monument of a Memory. This is very much so one of those cases of, like, I owe you an apology, I was not familiar with your game, because I have, like, kept tabs on Monument of a Memory for a minute now, and even back to when Will Ramos was in the band, I thought, like, you know, okay, there's something here, they clearly have, like, a lot of, like, passion poured into what they're doing. I don't know if it necessarily always translated to productive results in terms of how the music sounded, but at the very least, they were doing their thing, you know, they were chucking along and they were getting by, and there wasn't anything wrong with that. You know, not every band out there is going to put out what you consider to be one of the best songs of the year or anything like that. Until they do. Until they fucking do, because Monument of a Memory put out Devil in the Details, and just everything, like, clicked in a way that I truthfully didn't know they had within their arsenal. I didn't know that they were capable of a song like this that made me feel the way that it does, that makes me smile right now like a fucking dork the way that it does. I think there is, like, a real sort of avant-garde and symphonic feeling to this song and everything that Monument of a Memory dipped Devil in the Details into, and it's just, like, so productive in what it does, and I have never heard anybody in Monument of a Memory sound this good and cohesive before, and it really took me by surprise, because again, while I've always thought this band was solid, solid doesn't, you know, usually amount to having a song that you're willing to, like, climb to a fucking mountaintop and scream out loud at the top of your lungs how much it means to you and how much you love it. And Devil in the Details has not left my membrane once in the last 5 months of its existence, and I don't think it's ever going to. When I think of Monument of a Memory now, this is a song that jumps out at me, and I would hope that anybody out there who has never heard the song before and maybe never heard Monument of a Memory before, you give this song a chance and see if it can blow you away the way that it has myself. The next song is S-Ruck by One Step Closer. I feel like there was a lot of excitement and anticipation for the album by One Step Closer this year, All You Embrace, because anybody who has listened to One Step Closer up to that point, they knew what was going to happen when this album came out. They knew that more eyes and ears were going to be opened for One Step Closer, and that's, like, a beautiful thing to see, because this is a band who has really, like, earned their flowers, and whatever, you know, success they're going to find in the future, they have absolutely made a case for why they are not just, like, you know, deserving of that, but having earned it as well, for that matter. And when I listened to this album the first time all the way through, I felt like there was no song that stuck out to me more than S-Ruck. And not necessarily just because it, you know, has, like, a bit of a different tone, like a darker tone than the other songs here, but it just felt like this is everything that emo should be in big 2024. When I think of, like, you know, the old guard of emo, and you look at bands like Sunny Day Real Estate and early Jimmy Eat World, it feels like this song follows the blueprint made by those bands and in some ways modifies it to be, in my mind, possibly better. Because above all else, like, this song, aside from just, like, sounding amazing and being, you know, in my eyes, the, like, highest point for the album, it's just a heartbreaking fucking song. Like, look at the opening lines. I fear I lost the hope for all and face myself when I'm alone. You've been stuck in the wrong direction for years. And every line thereafter that is just as gutting as that opening stanza. And I think S-Ruck is one of those songs that, for as, like hard and uncomfortable as it is at times to sit through, it's so rewarding, because there are very few songs out there right now this year that I think are as impactful or pack as much of a punch to your fucking gut, in a loving way for that matter, as S-Ruck. I think this is the best song by One Step Closer in their entire run so far. It is the most captivated by them I've felt. It's the most gravitated towards them I've ever felt. And I hope anybody who has been able to listen to this album, you know, might share that sentiment about S-Ruck. The next song is Gaps in the Armoire by Ghost Atlas. I sort of already got to mention Ghost Atlas a little bit ago on the episode when mentioning Era and how Jesse Cash was able to kind of use his voice to make Blue Reverie somewhat of a Ghost Atlas-like song for the band. But I think when it comes to Jesse's delivery specifically on Ghost Atlas, there's not much else like it, because this guy has the kind of voice and range that was just, like, meant to take on these different musical avenues, you know? And out of every song on Dust of the Human Shape, Gaps in the Armoire was the one that, like, immediately jumped out to me. Even though it was a single, I still came out of that album just thinking, like, there is no song on the album that is on the level of Gaps in the Armoire. All the respect to everything else on that record, Gaps in the Armoire felt like a real achievement for Jesse. And it's like the song just has a way of, like, pulling you in right from the start with that guitar riff at the beginning of the track, and then how it feels like so, like, 90s alternative rock in so many ways while still embracing what it is that makes Ghost Atlas a, in my mind at least, like, a powerhouse entity in the scene today. I think Gaps in the Armoire is the perfect song for Jesse, the perfect song for Ghost Atlas, and the perfect song for anybody to be hearing right now. The next song is Hell by The Home Team. So I'm just saying full stop right now, even though this list is, you know, not meant to really give away what is my overall definitive favorite song of the year, I will say that I think Hell is the catchiest song of the year so far. I think in terms of The Home Team, like, really doing their best to master the, like, pop and R&B influential side of the scene this year, Hell is one of the biggest amplifications of that journey for the band. And it's like, it doesn't even take a lot for the song to just get stuck in your head. Like, literally just repeating the word hell in the chorus, the way that it's done and the way that Brian Butcher, like, really, like, enunciates his voice for that section of the track, it's just so easy for it to become this earworm and to just, like, live rent-free in your head for the rest of time. I think it's got great energy and bounce. I believe that when I reviewed the song back when it came out as a single, I said it sounded like a little bit Don Broco-esque in some areas. I stand by that, and I think that's the perfect kind of a sound for The Home Team to have explored on The Crucible of Life, and Hell truly is, in my mind, one of, like, the, you know, the crowning achievements for the band so far this year, and probably their entire careers. The next song is Kill the Lights by The Requiem. I just wanna see it all burn. Kill the lights. from fucking January all the way up until now in July, there has never been a moment where Kill the Lights leaves my mind or leaves my rotation. And, you know, whatever else I can say to really emphasize to you guys just how much this song has been able to stick with me all the way through so far in 2024. It was one of the first songs I got to review for the year, and it is still one of the absolute best. And when I think about everything that the Requiem got to do this year off of their debut album, A Cure to Poison the World, it felt like, I don't want to necessarily call Kill the Lights the pinnacle of everything, or like the, oh God, what's the real word for it? What am I trying to say? I guess I'm not trying to say like Kill the Lights is the sum of all the parts that made up the album, but I think it is a giant piece of the puzzle that made A Cure to Poison the World, in my mind, one of the most successful records of the entire decade so far, at least in terms of like how impactful it was to me and how I look at a band when it comes to what the Requiem did with the album. And I've mentioned it before that the Requiem, and this song for that matter, has like a real rooting in 2000s emo and post-hardcore. So I can say, like, yes, this song reminds me of something that I could have heard back then from AFI or The Used or My Chemical Romance or Under Oath. And, you know, that all remains true to this day. But at large, this is the Requiem stamping their own identity in big 2024 for the scene. And there is no song that I think fits that billing for them more than Kill the Lights. Whatever it is that the song does for me, like whether it's that catchy chorus, whether it's the like really like infectious riffs, and whether it's the outro that just perfectly utilizes the repeating of the phrase, parasites were parasites, just parasites, it has worked to the utmost fucking extent. The next song is Life Goes On by 408. Right. Life goes on and will be gone, but we'll always have the memories of us together. So here's to us and what it was. We can bottle up this moment. This is the one entry for this episode that I will go ahead and provide a like trigger warning / content warning, because my connection to Life Goes On does have to do with like death and loss and, you know, things of that nature. So you know, I kind of said before, like, pop punk sometimes, especially now, is like very, very hit or miss for me. I feel like maybe to some extent I've heard everything that the genre has to offer, and then I'm hit with a song like Life Goes On, which, you know, sure, it's not really even pop punk. It's more of an acoustic ballad that happens to be done by a pop punk band. But I think a lot of the elements that are so innate to 408 and their identity are present here on Life Goes On. And truthfully, the song might not have been as effective without those elements. So I guess in that sense, what I'm trying to say is, like, this song with these lyrics and this melody, it had to be done by 408, otherwise it wouldn't have worked. It is one of the most beautiful songs I have heard in recent years, and at the same time, one of, like, the saddest. And not necessarily because of anything that the song itself is saying, but more so, like, certain circumstances from when I first heard the song, and then also certain circumstances about, like, where my mind wanders off to whenever I listen to this song. Because even something as simple as like the acoustic melodies here, they're able to like kind of take me to a certain time and place in my life where, you know, I kind of had to deal with the idea of like letting go of stuff, like kind of growing up and understanding that, you know, not to be cliche or, you know, be too like on the nose for the song title, but life really does go on. And to be like way more personal to what I mentioned about the time and place when I first heard Life Goes On. So, this song dropped the week that, I learned that my grandfather was not going to make it. You know, he was in the hospital, he was very sick, and then there came a point in time where, decisions had to be made for, you know, his sake and his mercy, not being too explicit with that, I hope so. But yeah, that song, you know, it was what I was listening to kind of when I found all that out. And it's, you know, kind of made me think a lot about like my own mortality and the mortality of other people around me. And, you know, I'm getting like way too deep and dark now for what's ultimately a fucking acoustic pop punk ballad, but that's kind of what Life Goes On means to me. And ultimately, this is one of the most important songs of the year for myself. And at large, I do believe it is one of the best. The next song is Lubricant Like Kerosene by Serious Bass Cowboy featuring Kim Dracula. The way that I'm going to start this off is by somewhat rescinding a certain thing that I said about Lubricant Like Kerosene back when I reviewed Coup de Grâce, which is the Serious Bass Cowboy album from back in April. On the review, I'm pretty sure I said that Lubricant was like maybe the most accessible song on this record. And after, you know, more thorough listens of Coup de Grâce, it's not really accessible at all. It's actually a very, very fucking weird song. But it's weird in a way that is like such a perfect opening for a person like Kim Dracula to come onto the track and have these like dueling trade-offs with Connie. And I think together, Connie and Kim are what make Lubricant Like Kerosene, in my mind at least, stand out as probably the best song on Coup de Grâce. I think this track has like a real, like a theatrical and show tunes kind of a feel to it in some ways, albeit distorted, but I feel like those hints are still there and they are laced throughout the instrumentation that is still so inherently Serious Bass Cowboy in the most magnificent and effective way that anybody could have imagined. Lubricant Like Kerosene is just one of the coolest and freakiest and weirdest and most abstract and most rewarding listens of the entire year. And I implore anybody who has not listened to this song yet to go check it out. And for that matter, at large, if you haven't checked out Coup de Grâce yet, please go do so, because I think that album is going to be a milestone this year and the coming years for the post-hardcore revival sound. The next song is N.A. by Bring Me the Horizon. So already at the start of the year, when Bring Me the Horizon went on the Next Gen tour, N.A. kind of like unknowingly became one of my most anticipated songs for the rest of the year. Because if anybody remembers watching the like live footage where Ollie previewed certain songs that were unreleased at the time off of Next Gen, that was where he did like the recording of the audience for group vocals, and you ended up hearing that exact recording on the finished version of N.A. where the audience is saying like, "Ollie, you fucking knobhead," you know, among other things that they were recording at that show. And that kind of like unity between Bring Me and the audience, it already did a lot to help make N.A. feel like one of the most important songs on Next Gen. And then hearing the full song finally, I felt like N.A. just had this real like a certain alt-rock flair to it that even though we've heard Bring Me kind of explore before on, say, a song like In the Dark, N.A. feels to me like you take the ideas and the concepts and the sound of In the Dark and you channel it through like this dark pop filter of some form, and you get N.A., which is one of the most different sounding Bring Me the Horizon songs, and then also in my mind, one of the best this year. And I think N.A. has been able to stand out as one of the premier tracks on the record, and it's a record that has nothing but songs that, you know, have ranked in top hundreds for me before. These are songs that were in like top 20s, top 10s, in the case of Strangers, number one in 2022, and I do think that N.A. is very comfortably seated right there at the top of the echelon with those songs. We are 75% of the way through, only 5 more songs. If you've stuck with me this long, thank you so, so, so fucking much. You really don't have to do that, but I'm glad that you did. Really, I am. The next song is New Way Out by Poppy. So for right now, let's operate under the assumption that this next Poppy album is going to be called Zag, as the contrasting part to last year's album Zig. And the idea that Poppy, you know, purposely made an album that was more so along the lines of pop music last year in Zig, and then going into a heavier direction for Zag, possibly, hopefully, I pray this year. That's really, really fucking cool and exciting, because Poppy is somebody who has as much versatility as anybody else in the scene, and it would really have been a shame for her to, like, really, you know, be confined to just one sound. This woman was meant to be this explorative creature of the scene in so many ways. And in the lead up to New Way Out releasing at the start of June, learning that the song was produced by Jordan Fish, formerly of Bring Me the Horizon, that added so many additional layers of anticipation for myself, because I've always known what Poppy is capable of. I've always known what Jordan is capable of. I've looked at the two of them as some of the most, like, forward-thinking and important pieces of the current landscape of scene music and alternative music and whatever you want to call it. And having the two of them come together for New Way Out, like, I was fucking amped, guys. I was ready, and then the song did not disappoint me whatsoever. Yes, it's a much more, like, safe play of a song than most of what Poppy has done when channeling her heavier side. It's very accessible, very catchy, very easy to sing along to, and I do not at all for one fucking second look at that as being a detriment to this woman's sound. It is a goddamn fucking excellent sounding song, and I do not care if this is the direction for Zag. I want it. I fucking need it, guys. The next song is Slaughterhouse 2 by Knock Loose, featuring Chris Motionless of Motionless in White. So when the track list for You Won't Go Before He's Supposed To was officially dropped, there were two songs on there that really jumped out to me right away, and I think that was the case for other people. One of those two songs was Slaughterhouse 2, and hearing, or rather seeing the name of the song and seeing Chris be the featured artist on it, it was like, okay, this is very obviously a sequel to Slaughterhouse, which was a Motionless in White song from 2022 off the album Scoring the End of the World, which ended up being like one of my top 10 favorite songs of that year. And still to this day, it's a song that I regularly listen to because I feel just like very enamored by it. And the dueling vocals between Chris and Brian Garris on that song is a big ass component of what made it so successful in my eyes. So then fast forward to now, and we have the sequel song where the roles are kind of reversed, where it's a Knock Loose song that Chris is featured on, but he and Brian do as much of like a trade-off on this part as they did the first part of Slaughterhouse in 2022. And I feel like it could have been very easy for Chris to have done cleans on this song because he did cleans on Slaughterhouse, yet he didn't. It's just heavy, fast paced, go, go, go all the way through. And I adore all of like the Easter eggs and the callbacks to the first Slaughterhouse and the repeating of certain lines like One Mutilation, Under God, Break Down the Walls. Like, it felt like the proper follow-up to that concept and reward to all of the fans who helped make the first Slaughterhouse as big as it was. And just like how last year Knock Loose supported Motionless in White on tour and we got to see Brian join Chris for Slaughterhouse Live, next year, or sometime even later this year, we are going to see the opposite, where Motionless and White supports Knocked Loose, and we get to see Chris jump on the song live, and I will lose my shit, and I will be there no matter what. The next song is Suffocate by Knocked Loose featuring Poppy. I just said that when Yoon Go Before He's Posted track list dropped, there were two songs that jumped out to me. The first was Slaughterhouse 2, the other one was Suffocate. And obviously that's because it featured Poppy, and just the idea of Poppy and Brian on the same song, like screaming their lungs out and being as fucking ferocious and heavy as they possibly could be as a duo, that moved me, you know what I mean? That stuck with me. That was one of those things where I'm like, when that song releases and when I hear it for the first time, things are going to be different. And I don't think that sentiment was only felt by myself, because the level of excitement that was generated from the scene when Suffocate dropped, it felt really, really special. It felt like I was watching something play out in real time that was going to impact not just Knocked Loose and not just Poppy, but the entire scene for the rest of the year. It's the absolute perfect utilization of Poppy in this manner, and it's the heaviest and most angry she has ever sounded on a song, and that is the exact kind of energy that was required to make Suffocate the success that it has become. And then, you know, there's one part in the song that everybody was taken aback by, everybody has spoken about, everybody has guessed up, the reggaeton beat in the breakdown, and that is still one of, like, the coolest and just most wild and out there ideas that has been presented to any of us this year so far in the scene, and it worked. It helped make Suffocate feel like a fucking gem and feel like a moment in time and something that I am never ever going to forget, where I was when I first heard the song and the emotions that it made me feel. The next song is Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood by Bring Me the Horizon. I'm pretty sure that out of all of the new songs that came with Next Gen back when it released in May, Top 10 Statues That Cried Blood is, so far as of now, like, the biggest one of that bunch. It is the most well-received by the fanbase. It's the one that I've seen be blown up the most on social media. And you know what? It has attained that status for a very, very, very good reason in my mind. I think it is the perfect representation of what the band has stood for in their post-AMO iteration. Because it's like the song doesn't really have the ability to make up its mind during the runtime about what it wants to be. Because at some points it's heavy, at some points it feels like I'm like thrown right into the middle of like an arcade surrounded by a bunch of bubblegum machines, or bubblegum machines, that's what they're called, right? The one where you like put like a quarter into it and you turn the silver knob and then the gumball comes out. Do these things even exist anymore, or am I just aging myself really badly right now? And who cares, whatever. My point is that the song is very, very eccentric and just filled with energy. For some people, maybe too much energy, because there is a lot happening all at once. Even the fucking music video like really relays that message so perfectly. And even in the midst of all of that calamity and chaos, you still have at its core one of the catchiest and most infectious sounding choruses on any song all year by any artist up to this point. And like I've been saying, just looking at how Bring Me the Horizon is now and the way that they carry themselves and the kind of music that they tend to put out, this song just fits like a glove right into their discography. The 20th and final song on the list is VAN, Violence Against Nature by Bad Omens and Poppy. Initiated operation of your own extermination. Now it's too late for you to stop. I remember that when this song dropped back in January, it was hammered into the heads of anybody who has their timelines even somewhat slightly curated to have content from Bad Omens and Poppy be featured on it. And it felt like a really big deal to, at least myself, somebody who has been championing Poppy for years now, and somebody who I would like to think that I've kind of always had the vision for Bad Omens and for them to get to this point in their careers and have superstardom levels be attached to their names. And a part of why it felt special was we're not just like getting a collaboration between these two artists, we're getting a collaboration between them at the height of their respective careers. That's a big part of why I like instantly fell in love with VAN and gravitated towards it without having ever even heard it before the release, you know, obviously. And then after getting to hear this song, all I wanted to do was just listen to it over and over and over and over and over again. And it's like this song dives into so many of the specialties and strengths of both Bad Omens and Poppy. And like, just to give some examples, how in the initial verse, it's very quiet and it sounds like computerized in the background instrumentation. And Poppy is just like laying over these vocals as if she herself is like some kind of a robot, some kind of a computer. And that relates so perfectly to her lore and the stories that she has been telling in her music and the way that she's kind of like taken on those concepts. And then you get to something like the breakdown and it is just like so innately Bad Omens, and it felt like something that could have been on the original incarnation of The Death Piece of Mine. If it's just a Poppy song, it's a great song. If it's just a Bad Omens song, it is still a great song. But being a Bad Omens and a Poppy song, there is a part of me that is willing to call it one of the greatest songs of, at the very least, the last like decade or 5 years or, you know, whatever time span I need to go back into to really, you know, like emphasize to you guys how much I fucking adore this song. I will do so because that is how I have felt towards VAN, and that is what it makes me feel every single time I hear it. That is what I felt when I was standing in the crowd watching Bad Omens on April 21st, and even before they started playing the song, they put up on the screen just like these like flashing images of Poppy from the music video, and people in the audience knowing what was about to happen, and they're chanting for Poppy. They know she's not there, but they're still into it, and then they start playing fucking VAN, and the room comes alive, and it is like one of the most euphoric, one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in my fucking life. God damn, man, I fucking love VAN. And you know what else I fucking love? I fucking love all 19 other songs on this list that I mentioned. And what I feel right now, this kind of energy that is making me speak really, really fast and really high, and like I'm fucking like on an adrenaline rush or whatever it is that it's gonna be considered, that's what I have missed from, you know, talking to you guys about music. Me sounding this fucking crazy and possessed and obsessive, that's just what happens to me whenever, you know, you present to me a song like VAN or Top 10 Statues or Suffocate or Slaughterhouse 2 or Defamation or Kill the Lights or anything else I've mentioned today. I love music. Scene music in particular. And I'm not going to say, like, you know, all this was kind of taken away from me for the last 2 months, because that is, like, so fucking dramatic. If anything, I kind of prevented myself from giving myself this platform still, because I just kind of lost a lot of confidence, you know? And I'm really trying to make an effort to get back into the swing of things, so I know I have said this over and over again in this episode so far, but genuinely, from the bottom of my fucking heart, if you listened to any bit of this episode, whether it was 1 minute or whatever number of minutes this episode ended up being after editing it and putting in all the song clips, I cannot thank you enough. Seriously, thank you so much. I don't know what to do anymore for the outro because I got rid of the catchphrase. So like all I can do now is just like sign off, I guess. Yeah, if you guys you know, if you fucked with any of the songs that you listened to or you heard clips of in this episode and you listened to me waffle about them, I ask all of you guys and encourage you all to go check them out. You know, or whatever the fuck you've been fucking with from this year, go listen to that. Whatever listening to in the present setting will make you happy, that makes me happy. God damn, that was such a fucking cheesy ass way to close the episode. But again, I don't really know what to do anymore with the outro, so you guys have to deal with my my cringy behavior, for lack of a better way of phrasing that. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it, and I will see you guys when I see you again, hopefully very soon.